Israeli settlers stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied Al-Quds amid simmering tensions following the Friday assault on the holy place. President Zelensky says he will scrap negotiations with Moscow if Russia kills Ukrainian troops defending the besieged city of Mariupol. Plus, anti-racism protests continue in the U.S. city of Grand Rapids following the fatal shooting of an unarmed black man by a white police officer. Hey everyone, welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Badr Zanjefik. Good to have you with us. Now, top story this hour, the situation is highly explosive in the occupied Al-Quds, where just hours ago, Israeli forces attacked Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound again. The Palestinian Red Crescent says that at least 17 people have been injured. Also earlier, Israeli settlers have stormed the compound. Hamas resistance movement has reacted to violations, describing Al-Aqsa as its red line. It's warned that aggression against the Muslims' third holiest site would backfire on the Tel Aviv regime and settlers. In an attack on the Flashpoint Mosque that happened 2 days ago, Israeli forces injured more than 150 Palestinians and detained 400 others. Palestinians view the escalation as a declaration of war. They're calling for international intervention to prevent the situation from spiraling out of control. Many countries and organizations have condemned the raid, saying that Tel Aviv must be held to account. On day 53 of the Russia-Ukraine war, Russian forces struck major Ukrainian cities, including capital Kyiv. Moscow says it has attacked Kyiv's tank repair factory. The cities of Lviv, Mykolaiv, and Kharkiv have also been targeted over the past day. Ukrainian air defenses say they've shot down several Russian cruise missiles near the Polish border. In Mariupol, the tensions seem to be continuing unabated. Moscow says a majority of cities' urban areas are declared cleared of Ukrainian forces, and Russian troops are pressing ahead with their advances there. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has again warned about the worsening humanitarian crisis in Mariupol. He says many Ukrainian soldiers and injured people have been blocked in that area. He also added that killing Ukrainian forces in the crisis at city would put an end to talks with Moscow. Police in Sweden are preparing for new violent clashes following riots that erupted between far-right demonstrators and counter-ralliers. During the riots, 12 security officers were injured. The police department says it will not revoke the permit for a planned demonstration by the Danish right-wing Stram Kurs Party in the city of Örebro. However, it's beefed up security in anticipation of more violence. On Thursday, the Hardline Party held a rally in a heavily Muslim-populated area in Sweden. At a demonstration, party leader Rasmus Paludan burned a copy of the Holy Quran, ignoring objections from onlookers. Counter-rallies broke out with demonstrators setting fire to security vehicles after police ignored their calls to stop the far-right rally. The Stram Kurs Party is known for its anti-immigrant and anti-Islam political views. Okay, as for the first story this hour regarding Palestinians and the violence in Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Israeli raids there in escalation, I'm now joined from Amman by Tarak Tahoub, who is a political analyst. Good to have you with us, sir. So let's have your analysis of what's going on in the occupied Palestinian territories. And as you also might have heard, Palestinians are calling for international community to intervene and to prevent escalation from going any further. Well, we have heard international organizations in some countries showing some reactions and condemning things, actually maybe giving it lip service. But where can we expect some action to come from?
Tell you the truth, the Palestinians are being left alone. The international community has abandoned them. The double standards regarding them and Ukraine and Ukrainians are very evident to anybody. Ismail Haniyeh, leader of Hamas, has called on the Security Council to protect the Palestinians. and to protect their rights to practice their religion in Al-Aqsa Mosque and in Palestine, and there is nobody answering the call. Palestinians with their bare chests and fists are facing the mightiest occupation forces with their bare chests, and the occupation forces have no respect for the sacred Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is the property of 2 billion Muslims. It's not the property of the Palestinians. It's not the property of the Jerusalemites. It's the property of 2 billion Muslims. And these few thousand young Jerusalemites are protecting Al-Aqsa and protecting the mosque from the occupation forces, while the government is sneaking in provocative rituals and marches by ultra-right wing, because the shaky Bennett government is depending on these provocations to stay alive.
Mm-hmm. And the question is, you know, speaking of Al-Aqsa, Tariq, is that it's a sacred place both for Muslims, for Christians, for Jews alike. But and they have their own place of worship. They have that wall. They do their own special worship. And Muslims, too, regardless of who is maybe who that place belongs to and who belonged to it first, regardless of all of this, why shouldn't they have, as an occupation force, this is their responsibility on the basis of international conventions, to provide security for those people living under occupation? They're not doing that. They're even helping settlers attack Palestinian worshippers. This is Muslims' third holiest site, as you know.
First of all, let me correct your first statement. Al-Aqsa Mosque is an Islamic property. It has no Christian or Jewish involvement whatsoever. The 144 dunums, that's 144,000 square meters, with all its mosques, Al-Aqsa Mosque, the Dome of the Rock, Al-Musalla Al-Qibli, is property and to the Muslims, Muslims all over the world. There are no Christian holy sites or Jewish holy sites. It is not the Temple Mount. It's Al-Aqsa Mosque, and it's the property of the Islamic religion and Muslims worldwide. There is no... you don't need me to speak or anybody to speak. A picture tells a thousand words. You yep. can see the occupation forces armed with the most sophisticated sniper rifles and bullets and rubber-coated bullets and gas canisters, attacking peaceful worshippers. You can see on your screen beating up 70 years old, 80 years old, children, women. The Palestinians are unarmed, and that's why we call on the Security Council and the international bodies to protect the Palestinians and to protect their basic human right of doing their worship and their practice of religion at Al-Aqsa Mosque. Al-Aqsa Mosque is a single property. It's not part of the Christian religion. It's not part of the Jewish religion at all. It's only a Muslim site with all of its 144,000 square meters. It's not the Dome of the Rock. It's not Al-Aqsa Mosque only, but all of the Al-Aqsa complex.
Okay, yes, what I meant was it's holy, sacred for everyone and also followers of other religions. Thanks for your comments, Tariq Tabu, political analyst in Amman. Now, the leader of the Church of England has launched a scathing attack against British Prime Minister Boris Johnson for his plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, says that Johnson's plan is against the judgment of God. He says that sending asylum seekers away from where they sought refuge amounts to Britain subcontracting its responsibilities. The government drew massive criticism last week after it said that all male asylum seekers who arrive illegally on boats or in trucks will be sent thousands of miles away to Rwanda. Pressure is mounting on the government, especially after revelations that children as young as 15 are being classified as adults in their 20s so that they can be deported. Rights groups have called the plan appalling and a show of London's total disregard for the welfare of vulnerable people. The French presidential election has roared back to relevance as voters are upset with the inflation crisis. Many are upset with the austerity policies of French President Macron, though others are also skeptical of his contender, Marine Le Pen's promises. From Paris, Rami Mazahedou reports.
The French presidential election was trending as an easy victory for the incumbent, Emmanuel Macron, until the unrest in Ukraine began. Macron's insistence on long-term sanctions for Russia exploded already high inflation. That's resulted in widespread hardship, resentment, and tough assessments of Macron's economic record.
It's clear that Macron has not improved the quality of life for the French. He's not responsible for all the problems he's had to deal with, but it's clear there's a big difference between what he's promised and what he's delivered.
The French election may come down to this. Who do voters feel will protect the average person from the economically explosive effect of long-term sanctions on Russia over the unrest in the Ukraine? It's not a question the mainstream media wants to discuss, but it is top of mind for the average person. Polls show the race is now a dead heat, with a soaring Marine Le Pen of the National Rally taking an opposite tack, promising to oppose Russia energy sanctions, which are wreaking havoc with gas, heating, and food prices. As the challenger, Le Pen doesn't have a record to defend, and she's escaping anger over the economic crisis.
Macron has absolutely not done a good job on protecting our purchasing power. The middle class feels that Macron has contempt for the middle class, and they also feel a great contempt for the neoliberal globalist banker Macron.
Macron's far-right economic policies provoked the unprecedented yellow vest protests in 2018. He only made minor concessions before turning to brutal repression, and the coronavirus crisis only aggravated economic inequalities.
Macron needed to go much further in his efforts to reduce prices. It's unbearable to go to the supermarket these days. Even people who make an honest salary say that they are having trouble.
Abstention may reach record highs because many voters wonder if Le Pen would actually deliver on her populist economic promises. Her party has historically been aligned with neoliberalism as well. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
In other news, Iran has relocated its centrifuges from a facility in Karaj to safer places as a security measure. According to the spokesman for the Atomic Energy Organization, the decision was made after the centrifuge site in Karaj, which lies to the west of the capital, Tehran, came under a terrorist attack. Behrouz Kamalbandi says the move is in compliance with the agreements reached with the International Atomic Energy Agency. He also said that Tehran is following up on its talks with the IAEA to settle a number of outstanding issues. However, he noted no negotiations are on the agenda at the moment on technical issues. Let's now take a look at the developments in the United States. Public outrage continuing to swell in the city of Grand Rapids over the fatal shooting of an unarmed black man by a white police officer, demonstrators turning out for a fifth consecutive day. The protests remain peaceful, with demonstrators chanting slogans and waving signs. They've been calling for justice for Patrick Leoya. The 26-year-old Congolese refugee was killed during a routine traffic stop early this month in a scuffle with an officer over a taser in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The officer has not been charged. The victim's family is demanding that the authorities dismiss him and file criminal charges against him. The Democratic Republic of the Congo has also condemned the assassination of its citizen, calling it a cowardly act. Leola is the latest in a growing list of racial minorities killed at the hands of police. One such high-profile case involved the killing of George Floyd, which ignited widespread protests against racism in the U.S. and across the globe. The United States recording the highest number of monthly arrests at the border in two decades. In March alone, authorities arrested 210,000 asylum seekers at the Mexico border, which indicates a major increase compared to the same period last year. Officials are warning that a number could rise even further once the special border controls to curb COVID expire in May. The United States has been facing criticism for its handling of migration through Mexico. The Biden administration's policy has left asylum seekers stranded at crowded borders, patrol stations, where they wait for their applications to be processed. Thousands of them are unaccompanied children who have been placed in packed shelters in dreadful conditions. We have some bad weather-related news. More heavy rains hitting South Africa's eastern coast while the region is reeling from a deadly storm that killed some 400 people. Parts of the KwaZulu-Natal province are experiencing downpours with more rain forecast over the weekend. Search and rescue operations going on in the city of Durban. Emergency services in the region are also on high alert, while troops, police, and volunteer rescue workers are contributing to relief efforts. Dozens are still missing nearly a week after disaster struck, and first responders continue to recover bodies, especially from rural areas. The floods have affected more than 41,000 people and completely destroyed some 4,000 homes. The South African president has described the flooding as a catastrophe of enormous proportions, directly linking it to climate change. Now, elsewhere, search and rescue operations are going on after Tropical Storm Meggy battered the Philippines last weekend. At least 110 people remain unaccounted for, and a death toll has risen to nearly 170. Rainy weather and the difficult terrain have made the work extremely hard, and there is little hope of finding those missing. Davie City in central Leyte province is one of the worst hit areas. Hillside avalanches and more than a dozen villages have destroyed houses there, with one village almost completely vanished. Authorities are warning of the possibility of more landslides. That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
From India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
writing. Listeners special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, April 17, 2022. I'm Atefa Irfani hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program, actually your program, where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs, the programs of IRIB English Radio. So if you have any message for our listeners around the world, then you can also record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Please keep us company until the end of the program. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Listeners Special, and here I extend my heartiest congratulations to you all on a very blessed day. Yes, today is the 15th of the fasting month of Ramadan, a day on which the all-merciful Lord granted an excellent grandson to his last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. The newborn was such an excellent baby and was destined to grow up into an excellent man that the Prophet, on the commandment of God brought to him by Archangel Gabriel, gave his grandson the name Hassan. Yes, today is the birth anniversary of the second infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him. Congratulations to you all. As usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. As you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to us, especially to our technicians and engineers, because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service to our listeners around the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL card from us because we are in the time of pandemic, so we have to send electronic or EQSL cards to our listeners around the world. So here, I appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Mizanur Rahman, one of our regular listeners from Bangladesh, Heike Poran from Finland, and Alan Willey from Canada. Thank you, Mizanur Rahman, Heike, and Alan Willey. Of course, we've received so many emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of their names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. Here we have an email from Nico Genovis from Italy. Seems to be a new listener. Bidan Chandra Sanyal, one of our regular listeners from India. Mohammad Khaku from the US has sent us an email. Tawfiq Islami from Qeshm Island, Iran, has also sent us an email. And from Morocco, from Youssef Ben Meir, we've received an email. So stay with us, please. I will be back with these great emails. Welcome back. This is your program, Listeners Special, and from Italy, we've received an email from Nico Genovis. Nico Genovis says, in the name of God, dear friends of IRIB, my name is Nico Genovis, and I am an Italian radio listener. I'm writing to send you a reception report made a few minutes. I enclose two short recordings of the listening that I made with my receiver. I hope to receive your information with EQSL to my email. Best regards from Italy. Salam, ciao. Warm greetings to you, Nico Genovese from Italy. Please accept our appreciations to you for sending us this email. You seem to be a new listener. That's great. It's a pleasure. Yes, we've received your short recordings of the listening that you received. And we're so happy that you've recently received the signals of IRIB English Radio in your region. Nico, many thanks for sending us this email. Of course, my colleagues will soon send you an EQSL as a confirmation. Please send an email to us and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. It would be a pleasure. Thank you, Nico Genovese from Italy. And from India, we've received an email from Bidan Chandrasanyal, one of our regular listeners. Let's see what Bidan Chandrasanyal says. In today's world, the need for unbiased media to spread neutral news is undeniable. IRIB English Radio is a clear mirror of Iran's thinking and its social, political, and economic situation. Your radio reflects the news of not only your country, but the whole Islamic world. Iran is an Islamic peace-loving state, and your radio is doing an amazing job in spreading and showing this peace to the whole world. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Bidan Chandra Sanyal from India. Please accept my appreciations to you for sending us such a nice email, and thank you for your compliments. It's very nice of you. As you may know, IRIB English Radio has always tried to be unbiased and non-partial in broadcasting the news. And I think it's a duty of any good media to actually to broadcast unbiased, non-partial and correct, precise news and reporting about the world developments. But unfortunately, Western media is doing the opposite. I mean, the Western media tries to behave and to broadcast the biased and partial news. And we've seen this regarding what happened in Ukraine and what is happening against Palestinians in the occupied territories. It's we've seen the biased behavior of the Western media against Palestinians and in favor of the fake regime of Israel. Yes, we are seeing it in the Western media. Unfortunately, that's it. Anyway, thank you for sending us this email, Bidan Chandra Sanyal from India. It was great. I mean, showing us your opinion about IRIB English Radio news and programs being, as you said, reflecting the news of country, but the whole Islamic world, and IRIB English Radio being a clear image of Iran thinking and its social, political, and economic situation, and of course the world. Bidan Chandra, again, thank you for sending us this email. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. So after a short break, I will be back with other emails. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Morocco from Yusuf Ben Meir. So Yusuf says, "Dear IRIB English Radio staff, greetings. I prefer to receive a paper QSL card rather than an electronic one or an EQSL. I know that the electronic card is the solution in these difficult times, and I hope that things will improve as soon as possible. I hope you are all fine. Greetings to you from Morocco. Stay safe." Salam and warm greetings to you, Yusuf Ben Meir from Morocco, and thank you very much for sending us this message. So, you prefer to receive a paper QSL card rather than an electronic one or an EQSL one. But as you may know, in the time of pandemic, sending paper QSL card is not possible. And we, just like you, hope that things, the health situation will improve as soon as possible around the world, and the coronavirus comes to an end very soon, so that we can send our dear listeners, like before, traditionally, send our dear listeners paper QSL cards and the souvenirs and promotional items of IRIB English Radio. Youssef Ben Meir from Morocco, thank you very much for telling us your view about, the kind of QSL as a confirmation. Anyway, for now, we have to send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. And here from U.S., we've received an email from Muhammad Khaku, one of our old and regular listeners. So let's see what he says. Our beloved prophet informs us Ramadan is the month whose beginning is mercy, whose middle is forgiveness, and whose end is freedom from fire. We pray that Allah showers all your Muslim listeners and their honored families with infinite mercy and divine love. May your worship be accepted, all your prayers and supplications answered, and all your sins forgiven during these blessed days and nights. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Muhammad Khaku from the U.S. Many thanks for sending us this email, and thank you for your nice prayers and your nice wishes for us and for our listeners around the world. We also hope that your worship be accepted, all your prayers and supplications answered, and all your sins forgiven during the blessed month of Ramadan. Thank you for writing this email to us. It was really kind of you. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. And please accept our nice wishes and prayers and hopes for you, Muhammad Khaku. Write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with an email from Geshmail and from Tawfiq Islami. Stay with us, please. Here we've received an email from Tawfiq Islami from Geshmail, the Islamic Republic of Iran. So let's see what Tawfiq says. Hi, let me thank you for your English programs, which are very informative and useful. The new section, views and analysis related to the Persian Gulf, are quite interesting to hear and read. It's definitely the number one radio station in the region. Best regards. Salam and warmest greetings to you, Tawfiq Islami from Geshmail and Iran. Thank you very much for sending us this nice email. We are so happy that you just told us your views about our programs. As you said, you found IRIB English Radio, the number one radio station in the region, and that's great. And it seems that you like the news section, views and analysis related to the Persian Gulf. Thank you for saying and telling us your views about IRIB English Radio broadcast. My colleagues will soon send you an EQSL card as a confirmation. Please write to us soon and tell us more about IRIB English Radio broadcast. Before we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special, again, I congratulate all our listeners on the auspicious birth anniversary of the second infallible era of Prophet Muhammad, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him. And here, I appreciate those of our great listeners who sent us reception reports and, of course, emails. Let me read their names again. Tawfiq Islami, Alan Vili, Heiki Puran, Mizanur Rahman, Nico Genoves, Bidan Chandra Sanyal, Yusuf Ben Meir, and Mohammed Khaku. Thank you, all of you, for sending us these emails and reception reports. Please keep in touch with your radio, IRIB English Radio, and of course your program, Listeners Special. Have a good time, take care, stay safe and healthy. Goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Once again, our phone number is 00981-2201-3720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Clashes at Al-Aqsa Mosque during the holy month of Ramadan were one of the most violent. Israeli occupation forces attacked Jerusalem's Al-Aqsa Mosque, wounding more than 150 Palestinians, while it was filled with Ramadan worshippers. Isn't Al-Aqsa a place of worship for Muslims? Why, then, do they become a victim of Israeli violence? Meanwhile, condemnations have poured in from Iran to Saudi Arabia, with the EU and the U.S. to have only expressed grave concern.
Tensions are high in the occupied territories amid a recent increase in crackdown on Palestinians. Regime forces attacked worshippers in Al-Aqsa Mosque on Friday. Scores of Palestinians were wounded in the clashes. Around 400 people were also arrested. Muslim nations as well as resistance groups have condemned Tel Aviv. The Organization of Islamic Cooperation called on the international community to force Israel to end its aggression. Iran said Friday's events in Muslims' third holiest site show that the Palestinian resistance is alive and thriving, and Israel is in a state of desperation. Analysts believe that Tel Aviv is intentionally increasing tensions to take control of Al-Aqsa Mosque.
Do you think that the Israelis are escalating the whole situation in the West Bank in order, at least in Jerusalem, in order to control the Al-Aqsa Mosque? And that was the aim for the settlers groups who announced many times that they wanted, to get into Al-Aqsa Mosque and practice some of their own religion kind of practices. If they did such an act, definitely that would lead to a war.
The clashes came after 3 weeks of deadly tensions in the occupied territories. Tel Aviv has deployed more forces to the West Bank and conducted raids and house searches there almost every day. This has resulted in the deaths and injuries of dozens of Palestinians. Israel's Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, has given Israeli forces a free hand in their operations. Many believe that the latest escalation could turn into an uprising or a new intifada in Palestine.
Palestinian experts are warning that they could return back, let's say, to more clashes, more escalation. These killings by the Israeli forces and this escalation could any time turn into an uprising or an intifada. No one can tell, especially that the Israelis are saying they will not end their operation. It will continue.
Palestinians have also increased their operations in response to the crackdown. Since March 22nd, they have conducted several stabbing and shooting operations, including one in Tel Aviv, leaving 14 Israelis dead. The increase in anti-Israel operations in the occupied territories show that Palestinians have reached a conclusion that they should decide their own fate, especially after several Arab countries normalized ties with Israel. Palestinians believe that resistance against occupation is the only way they have to achieve their goals.
Let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. Human rights advocate and Palestinian activist Amal Wahdan joins us from Ramallah. We also have writer, journalist, and political analyst Hafsa Kara Mustafa joining us from London.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'd like to welcome to you both. Let me first start with you, if I may, Amal Wahdan, and let's talk about what has occurred in terms of the violence part. And the reason why I'd like to start off with this is because we need to enlighten viewers and people watching as to how the Israeli forces used extreme, means here. Looking at the entire mosque that were raided by the Israeli occupation forces, firing live bullets, tear gas, and stun grenades, preventing access to paramedics, and attacking the mosque guards, health workers, and media personnel, resulting in 150 Palestinians to have been wounded. What do you think about the tactics and the level of violence that was used by the Israeli forces?
Yeah, these tactics that they have used has surprised the prayers who were in Al-Aqsa Mosque since the raid came just after dawn. So people were not expecting a raid that early, but this is actually a part of their aggression measures, increasing and escalating their measures against Palestinians. Not only this, the excessive use of arms, excessive use of tear gas and sound gas. Prayers did not expect this, so they took them in a sudden action. And it caused a lot of chaos, a lot of damage to the mosque, inside the mosque. Can you imagine, you know, anybody who's listening to us now, if a police force stormed into a church or a synagogue or a mosque in somewhere else in the Western world, this will become a real scandal, you know. They will call the ICC to investigate and take actions against the country, against the police forces. But in Palestine, the Israeli arms, the Israeli army, the Israeli special forces can do anything in any place. No boundaries for them to act like barbaric and like Nazis, actually. This is a fascist country. It was categorized as an apartheid state. And that last time, you know, a few days ago, Bennett has given the settlers and individuals the right to own guns and use these guns. We know that settlers in organized groups, they have their guns. They are like paratroopers to the Israeli army. But now they are giving a free hand to everybody to own arms. Mm-hmm. This is a call for war. And what happened in Al-Aqsa Mosque, actually, as your report showed, that they arrested people, hundreds of people. The number that we know is 400 people. But the injured were, the first count of injured were 250. Part of them were treated in Al-Aqsa Mosque, okay, paramedics tent, and some of them were transferred to Al-Maqasid hospital. 10 people yesterday were
critical condition.
Yes, in very critical condition, and others were hit in the eyes, for example.
Sure, and that's what I want to talk about even more. I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, Hafsakar Mustafa, but videos showing worshippers lying on the ground, their hands tied behind their backs, children to be among the ones who are arrested, worshippers beaten by Israeli police while evacuating. You know, the aggression here is so severe that it's skimmed over and when it's covered by the media. Meanwhile, Israel has attempted to spin the police raid, as they call it in Alaska, as an effort to protect the freedom of worship. So we can see who they're trying to serve and how they're trying to spin the story. Do you agree that they're doing that?
Well, of course not, but I think we have to put this into the current context, which is that the international media and international interest and focus is currently now on Ukraine. And what the Israelis do, and they routinely do this, is that when there's a major world event that is distracting world opinion, they will make the most of it by going on a killing spree of Palestinians. And that's exactly what they've done. They're literally making the most of this current war in Eastern Europe, which is attracting a lot of attention, and using it as an opportunity to carry out ethnic cleansing operations and operations inside places of worship that actually we wouldn't have seen Nazis do. I mean, for the past 70 years, we've heard of the horrors of the Holocaust and Nazi operations against Jews, but actually this puts Nazis to shame. This is far beyond what we've seen for 5 years happening in Germany. This has been going on for 70 years. This is an attack. These are war crimes. These are immoral crimes that should be condemned vehemently by the international community, and they're not, because Israel currently enjoys total impunity and is making the most of the situation, which is distracting, public opinion is distracted by the war in Ukraine, and they're making the most of it, knowing that essentially only Middle Eastern media will actually take interest in what's happening, whilst obviously Western media is focused elsewhere.
Amal Wahdan, perhaps you can tell us why we are having this problem carry on for all these decades, which is what's been called the flashpoint of Al-Aqsa Mosque, sacred to Muslims. We know how Jews feel about that. Why has this been a flashpoint? What can be done to remove that status?
Actually, this apartheid state was created by the superpower, by the British first, and then sponsored and nourished by the USA and the NATO countries. So this apartheid country is above any law, above international law, above human rights law. In the UN Security Council, General Assembly, they can escape any impunity, any action to stop them. We cannot even take them to ICC. The most that they can, the most that we can do is bring an investigation to their crimes. So this is one part of why this state is getting what it's doing right now. And storming in and raiding Al-Aqsa Mosque the way they did is an escalation to a situation that was going on before. You know, groups of settlers from different settlers, radical organizations, have raided Al-Aqsa Mosque, not storming in, you know, walking in or making silence prayer. They took an order from the court that they can do silent prayer in Al-Aqsa Mosque. This is inciting Muslims, and this is violating the Muslim rights of worshipping in their sacred shrines in Al-Aqsa Mosque. So barging into Al-Aqsa yesterday and raiding Al-Aqsa while, you know, worshippers were ready to go for the dawn prayer is something that cannot be tolerated. And even if there wasn't any war somewhere else like Ukraine, the international community would not even take a real measure. They will condemn, they will bring, you know, they will send some convoy delegations and delegations here, but they will not take action against this apartheid regime. Nothing is gonna stop them. They are going to repeat what they did in Ibrahimi Mosque in Hebron. So what happened is a big, you know, it's a flashing alarm towards the whole world. But for us Palestinians, we're continuing what we are doing right now. We're resisting. We're resisting these racist and discriminated system here. We're going to continue resisting.
Sure. Hafsakar Mustafa, one of the most interesting things, maybe not too much of a surprise, but yet enough of a surprise, are the demographics of some of the Palestinians that have actually protested recently. And I'm talking about in specifically what happened in Tel Aviv and also then other Palestinians who are not affiliated with the resistance groups like Hamas or the ones out of the Gaza Strip or even to the PA or any groups or any ideology. And they're coming out and they're protesting. What does that show when you're seeing Palestinians that have no affiliation of any kind coming out and actually carrying out what's been called resistance operations? Which, well, the one in Tel Aviv is the one that was the most severe in terms of the results that came out of that.
Well, first of all, it does show that the Palestinian people are united in condemning the Israeli actions. But of course, it also shows that this is a problem that impacts all of Palestinian society, and it doesn't have to be exclusive to one political party. Of course, in the eyes of the Israelis and how they want to spin it, they would like to present that these actions made by Palestinians are exclusively reserved to groups that are affiliated to political parties. But actually, the upset is generalized and is across the board from across Palestinian society, from all ages and from all social groups, and exactly from whether they are politicized or not. So I think this is a reflection of the upset that you have amongst Palestinians of all scopes, and I think it's mirrors the scale of the atrocity that's being committed. Obviously, this is not targeting militias or certain armed groups. This is targeting civilians who are going about their daily lives and inside places of worship, which makes it not only immoral, but actually and legally a war crime.
You talked about Amal Wahdan, about the settlers. Tell us, first of all, it's very alarming that you said that they are now allowed to bear arms. I don't have information on that, but that makes the situation rather very dangerous. Because if you can explain to us why it is that they are allowed to enter the Al-Aqsa Mosque sporadically at intervals, not really well thought out or well planned from what it seems, and they are given escort by the Israeli security forces. What can you please explain to us what that story is all about?
First of all, the Islamic organization in Al-Aqsa Mosque has denounced the continuous storming into Al-Aqsa Mosque, settlers going almost each day, day in, day out. So the settlers took this to the court, and the court allowed them to do silence praying in Al-Aqsa, which means this is the first step for them. Having silence prayer, then having real prayer inside Al-Aqsa, then sacrificing, performing sacrifices in Al-Aqsa Mosque as they wanted to do yesterday. Later on, splitting, time and space, just like in Al-Ibrahimi Mosque in Hebron. So what they are doing is a gradual, step by step. To occupy Al-Aqsa and then do what's in their what's in their mind, ruining Al-Aqsa. What happened yesterday is has happened in 1969 when they burned Al-Aqsa, and it was really horrifying for all Muslims. Unfortunately, the Arab world has not reacted. In the same, in the same level of this action, and they only condemned these massive storming in and raiding into Al-Aqsa. So what is needed to be done here is real action, and the people of Palestine had to decide that they are going to take the power into their own hands, and they're going to defend themselves. What we have to remind the whole world that we are in a defensive position, even when people like young people like Dia and like Raad infiltrate into Tel Aviv and do these operations. This is a normal reaction of self defense. When mm-hmm. there is a colonization power in a place, there are colonizers, colonized people who are going to resist. It's the course of history everywhere.
So let's so let's go along those lines here. And Habsakar Mustafa, if we have Palestinians brave enough to go out there and to risk their lives, they need to somehow be backed. Now, we know Hamas has encouraged, for example, some of these Palestinians. But even apart from Hamas, some Arab countries need to do that. Now, the reactions that came on this Al-Aqsa raid, Iran, Iraq, Qatar, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Jordan, they all say that Tel Aviv must be held to account. But yet you have the European Union or the U.S. Who have said, well, this is of grave concern, and they call for an end to the immediate, an immediate end to the violence. The Arab support from the Arab countries, the leaders, it's not there the way it should be, is it?
No, not only is it not there as it should be, but actually the recent normalizations have even boosted Israeli actions because, of course, they're seeing that there is absolutely no consequence to what they're doing. Obviously, we know that they've got full backing of Western countries, so let's just put that aside for a second. But at the very least, there was a level of hostility from the Arab world, officially at least, over the years. Now, recently, with all these normalizations that have come from absolutely nowhere and for no reason, and that bring nothing to these Arab countries, and particularly the wealthy Gulf states, for instance, which don't need money, this has actually boosted Israeli actions. And the very least we should see now, and perhaps there should be more pressure. Let's ignore Israel because it won't abide by any form of pressure. But I would hope to see pressure on these Arab/Muslim countries actually sever relations with Israel as a result of these actions. Because, of course, this violation of a mosque during Ramadan is absolutely unacceptable. It's unacceptable morally, regardless of where you are and who you are. But, of course, for Muslim countries, it's doubly unacceptable. Sure. And I think that we should put pressure on Arab countries to actually take a